If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Australia, and welcome to My Millennial Property. Emily Wallace here with John Pidgeon. And today, my guest is indeed John Pidgeon. We're doing a bit of a different one today. I feel like it's been over 2 years since John and I have co-hosted the podcast. And as we were discussing what to talk about on today's episode, I said to John, can I interview you? Because there's a lot of things that I think the general listenership don't quite know. And even I might learn something about you as well. It's going to be property related, but also a couple of personal questions. So hope you're up for it, John. What do you reckon?
I'm always up for it, Emily. Hopefully not too personal, but we'll give it a go, will we?
You can always say no comment. I feel that's a very, you know, generic yes. No comment.
Correct.
Yeah. Let's get into it. Okay, John. I've got a series of questions, but I feel like one's going to lead down a rabbit hole, you know, after another. So we'll just go with the flow for this episode. Hopefully you guys are strapped in and ready for some intel on John. First question for you, John, is a pretty basic one to get started. It's a good warm up. Tell us, where was your first property purchase and as many details as you'd like to share about that property purchase as you wish?
Okay, so for the long-time listeners, I apologise because you probably already know this, but for those that have been here in the last couple of years, my first purchase was straight out of university. I moved to Horsham, Country Victoria, and thought, well, I love this concept of buying property. My uncle was a Westpac bank manager, and he's like, you've got to get yourself into property. And he actually taught me the rent vesting philosophy. He's like, well, while you're in this town, you might as well buy something, but you don't have to live in it, and this is how it works. And at age 21, it really gave me the concept of, the tenant can actually cover the running costs of my property. And back then, I have to check my accuracy on this, but I'm thinking that interest rates are like 7%. So we're sitting here at 5% days, and some of us are freaked out because we've never seen this before and it's doubled in the last 12 months or so. But yeah, it was just what it was at the time. So long story short, first purchase was in Horsham. It was actually a joint venture with my sister. And I don't know why, but we invested at 90% loan-to-value ratio. Oh. Funny that. 10% deposit. We put down $3,000 each on a $64,000 property. $3,200 to be exact.
There you go. So,
and it was renting for like $100 a week. So I'm like, okay, my maths is okay. This isn't actually going to cost us anything to hold. It was a corner block, reasonable size, but it needed a little bit of work. So we got our hands dirty and we purchased. So she was actually living around the area at the time as well, and it worked well for both of us to be able to go and get our hands dirty and a few things there on that property. So that was where the property career was launched in good old Horsham, Country Victoria.
Good things come from Horsham, that's for sure. Mm. Now, a couple of questions off the back of that. First things first, I assume it would have been a bit uncommon for rent vesting to be like a no. I don't even think the term rent vesting really came to light until, what, the past decade maybe, and not trying to age you by any means, John, but I assume you were ahead of your time then.
Well, I didn't think so because it was my uncle who was telling me this. So I was like, okay, well, he's been around the traps and deals with investors and wealth creators on a daily basis coming through the bank, which, mind you, his two most common customers were business owners and landholders, whether that be residential or commercial agriculture. So that told me a thing or two as well. But what I did know was that I was the only one buying real estate. A lot of my friends, we'd all live together and bunk in together and play footy together and all that. Not many of them were buying property at all, and if they were buying it, they were buying it to live in, but it wasn't high on their agenda. So, yeah, I think a lot of the grounding for my uncle was critical, but also I started to read a lot of books as well. So the whole Rich Dad Poor Dad sort of journey amongst a heap of other things. But, yeah, digressing a little, from a research point of view, it was the property investor magazine that you get at the news agency on a monthly basis, and that was it. There was no internet back in 1999. Well, there might have been, but it wasn't definitely in Horsham. So the research was based on who I knew and what intel they could give me.
And in terms of the location of buying in Horsham, you mentioned that's kind of where you landed, and you know, your uncle suggested buying and renting it out rather than living it in yourself. Do you think that you could have bought better than there, or given Horsham was probably quite understated at the time, and I imagine what 64K was back then is probably what, 6-7 times? I'd have no idea.
Yeah, well, interesting. On a couple of points there. I went back there a few years ago, and because we still have family and friends back there. So I went back there. I'm like, I want to go and see what this house actually looks like today. And not a lot had changed, to be honest, other than the improvements that we gave it. But I wanted to look at the property price and what had actually transpired over the what was basically 20 years since we had purchased it. And it had basically doubled every 10 years, like they said that real estate used to do, right? So, but double 64 is only 128, and double 128 is only 256. So, like, we're not talking massive dollars still today, but the compounding effect is what excited me. And within 2 to 3 years, it had doubled. So it was no... It was a fluke. It was just basically, okay, buy and hold. But we did get some uplift in the first couple of years, which was cool. But yeah, look, today it's a 250K property in Horsham, and it'd probably rent for $300 a week. So the yield's still relative. Could I have bought somewhere else and got a better return? I think with the money we had, and I've come out of uni, I've hardly had a dime to scratch myself. So I think we did the best of what we had at that time. And that's a message that I give to a lot of investors today. It's like, well, yeah, you could save another 3 or 4 years to buy that $1 million property, but can you get in now at 600, for example, and let the compounding effect and the leveraging effect do its thing in real estate?
Indeed. I think that's a really great point to make, and so many people focus on, you know, what if I have more, or what does more look like, but getting in being the fundamental key to real estate, getting in as soon as you can in most cases is certainly paramount. Did you hold that property for long? Do you still have it?
No. Well, this is the other thing. When we go in with joint ventures, and I tell everyone this, you've got to have a clear expectation of what's going on with both sides of the party, or if there's more, then so be it. We had no agreement written up. I knew my sister. She knew me. We knew each other. We told it how it was, and we just went with the flow. I wouldn't advise that today.
Yeah.
However, 3 years down the track, we're like, okay, this thing's made us some money. I actually moved to Adelaide at that time, and she also moved, and she said, well, let's sell this and let's take our profits, because I was about to buy into a business at the time in Adelaide. So it was actually a timing thing where, again, it both worked to sell and take the proceeds, and that actually launched into my first business. So, yeah, would I have still held that property otherwise? Probably. The one thing I do say about rentvesting is that I didn't really want to live in that house that we bought. Like, it wasn't the most attractive looking house. And I could live in something so much better with two of my mates, three of my mates, in a better part of town. So that's the other thing about the whole rent vesting philosophy. You can choose where you want to live.
Yeah, indeed. It becomes a lot more flexible, doesn't it, when you're not bound to a specific location or a time frame even as well. It gives you a lot of choice, which is...
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is the idea. Now, if you were to buy anywhere in the world, and I feel like you're a pretty seasoned traveller as well. You've seen a bit of the world, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, I have, yes.
Where would you live? And you can't say where you currently are because you love it. Outside of where you live, where would you live?
You beat me to it. Where would I live? Well, where would I invest for growth and outcome, or where would I actually like to live if it wasn't here?
Yeah, no, where would you like to live? We can get to the investment piece, but just from like a lifestyle piece and where you enjoy being, where would you like to live?
I look at the Scottish Highlands and I'm thinking, I could see myself there. I could see myself with a few sheep and just roaming the countryside, the green grass. And when I went over there to visit or travelled around, I love that part of the world. Would I move there? Probably too cold for me, but it's just something that intrigues me and excites me to have that sort of outlook, I suppose. And the other one would be, you know, in those American movies where there's like the ranches, like the big picket fences, and I can't remember a TV show that I saw.
The American Dream, really, is what it's sort of the picture perfect
that's
American.
Right.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
And I don't know if it's real or not, but that's another place that I could maybe settle down.
Nice. And on a more professional note, in terms of where you would currently buy in 2022 for somewhere that has growth, you don't have to name a suburb, but more generally, where would you look?
Not to live, just as somewhere that I could see some growth happening.
Yep, some opportunity. Yep.
Does it have to be in Australia, or can it
no,
be
anywhere.
Abroad, or either or other? Yeah, okay. There's a lot of volatility internationally at the moment, so I'd be hesitant to go there. Maybe maybe in Bali, some Ooh. Sort of villa over there. Because you know how a lot of Bali has gentrified a heap over the last 20 years, right? I'd find somewhere over there that hasn't quite done its thing yet, but that's the urban sprawl, it would occur, and the price to get in still relatively cheap. I do like Melbourne's northern suburbs. I still think there's really good value out that way, and not just because I'm an Essendon supporter, but I think out sort of around that Pasco Vale, Ascot Vale area, I think there's – when you look at the price of what you can buy there for what you can buy in the southeast, I think there's a big discrepancy there.
I'm with you on that. When you look at the radius from CBD and amenity and everything like that, it's massive. The price difference is huge.
Yeah.
So, yes, here. Hmm. Now, we are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I've got some more personal but not too personal questions for you so our listeners can get to know you a little bit better. We'll be right back.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah. That plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Okie dokie. So, John, obviously you've been in property and around property from a young age, relatively. Like when you think about your first purchase coming out of uni, buying in Horsham, and now being in the business of property. And just on that note, by the way, John is a buyer's agent, everyone. A lot of people that I have a discovery call with get very confused when they say they want to buy an investment property and say, I don't buy investment, but if you came through the podcast, you need to talk to John. A lot of people, it's like it's not a known fact about you, John. So I feel like people need to know that for the sake of knowing it, because people are often surprised. So you are a buyer's agent and you have a team of buyer's agents, right?
We do, yes.
Correct. Yeah, so no, take
maybe
note.
I don't tell the world. I'll get on to marketing about that one.
Yeah. Yep. I think you need to have marketing. It needs to be a known fact that you are a BA. Yeah.
But in their defense, I've always been about education first.
Correct.
So not to say that buyer's agents don't educate, but my passion was always teach someone how to do it. And still is today, but I realize that a lot of people necessarily don't have the time or want or desire to be educated. They just want someone to go and do it for them, hence the BA service. But, yeah, a lot of people would know our business purely because of that education / coaching nature of it.
Correct, which is – and so the core business being Solvair. Solvair, yes. Does that have a particular meaning to it?
Well, I believe it was Latin for solution back in the day. I don't know if I just made that up or not, but that's what I'm running with.
That sounds about right. I don't know if I can Google it in time, but
you don't want John's life coaching service. Like, you've got to have something that's a little bit more creative or out there.
Yes, the Latin solvere means to loosen or solve. So
correct.
There
loosen,
you go.
Yes. We're a loose business. There you go. I was right. I haven't checked that out in a while. So that's where it come from.
Mm. So if you weren't running Solvair and being a BA and being in the property space, if you had your time again, what profession would you love to be in or explore? What other fields do you enjoy?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. So I like, well, for the long-time listeners, they would know that I have a passion for AFL, Australian Rules Football. I was going to say I wanted to be an AFL coach, but I know that comes with too much stress and all that stuff that I'm not really interested in at this day and age in my life where I've got three kids. I would actually love to travel the country recruiting footballers.
Oh.
Right? I'd go and watch football games. I'd watch videotapes. I'd talk to people. I'd just want to extract the best possible athletes in the country to come and play for a club, my club, whatever it may be.
So picking talent and having an eye for picking – yeah, really good talent or up-and-coming talent for a team.
Yeah, talent ID. So I coach our under-13s. Max plays in here locally. Have an involvement in the senior club as well, and that's my passion outside of real estate other than my family.
Yep.
So that's probably something I'd love to do.
Love it. Mm. Absolutely love it. And it's kind of interesting that the skill set of – you know, finding houses and solutions is actually quite transferable to a role like that, having an eye for detail, an eye for picking really good people out of a bunch is, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, and I think, like, it's interesting without expanding too much on that, but I was one of those people that went through high school not really knowing what I wanted to do, and I knew that I wanted to do something in sport, but I didn't really know what. I never thought I'd be a teacher. This whole sports coaching excited me a little bit, but I didn't know what avenues you would take and whether you could actually gain an income from it. And I sort of got my uni score. I'm like, okay, what will that qualify me for? Like, none of our family had been to uni. So I'm like, okay, I can get into teaching here. Let's do that and have a major in phys ed and live the uni life. And so I sort of rolled into that knowing that, yeah, I love coaching and helping people. But that was just as a byproduct of me getting a uni score. It wasn't high enough to do medicine or law or anything like that, so it was never an option. But once I got in there, I realised, yeah, actually I love this stuff, not so much the teaching but the ability to coach and motivate, which led to personal training and running that sort of business. And then, okay, when I started to feel burnout from that, it's like, okay, what's next that I'm passionate about? And it had always been property. So that was then the natural progression to go and coach and educate in that space. So, yeah, I think, and I say this to everyone today, it's like, well, yeah, you want to go and buy property and you want to build wealth through property, but what's really your driver? What do you enjoy in life and what do you want to get out of life, as opposed to just going through the 9 to 5, just meandering through the week to enjoy the weekend? And I know that the girls have got My Millennial Career, and I think it's a great concept to be able to tune into that. Like, imagine when I was at uni to be able to listen to that sort of stuff and understand, well, okay, this is what I could do with my life.
I agree. I feel like there'll be a point in time where working the 9 to 5 is actually not the norm. You know, I think we're breaking down so many barriers around those conversations of what a career looks like and what work-life balance looks like and following your passion and creating a business. And certainly My Millennial Career touches a lot on all those. But even just in the My Millennial Money Facebook group, I often see posts on there of people debating changing their 9 to 5 or having a career change in, you know, their late 30s and actually following their passion and going along with what they actually get fulfillment out of, which is really, really interesting and inspiring to watch, actually. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think it's great that people can do what they love and make a living out of it. I mean, what better way to live?
Yeah, well, you just wake up enjoying every day. And I suppose, without sounding like a bit of a knob, but I rarely wake up not looking forward to the day, and a lot of people around me aren't in that position. And I think, well, you can get yourself into that position where you feel as though you are enjoying every day. It doesn't mean everything's going to be rosy and there'll never be any obstacles, but conceptually speaking, you enjoy what you're doing, trading your time for money.
Agree. And when did you actually start the property business, you know, being in coaching and mentoring around finance and property?
Yeah, so it was around 2011 where it coincided with, as I said, selling the personal training business and Amy and myself moving to the Central Coast. And that was basically a time where I said, right, peg in the sand, this is what I'm going to turn my hand to. But I suppose, when did I actually start doing it? Just by talking to friends and family about what they're doing and how we're generally helping them. You know how you just, like, your friends say, oh, you've got an interest in this, can you help me with that sort of stuff? Like, definitely not on the payroll by any means, but it was just it was a natural progression, but officially 2011, yeah.
Definitely. And look, it's a space that's growing, right? Like, I think 2011 probably would have been a time where talking about a property strategist or a property coach probably would have been a new concept to a lot of people. Did you find that it was something that you had to work hard on the marketing and the angle of what you actually do?
Yeah, totally. I think it still is today. Like, when you look at real estate agent, buyer's agent, those two terms are reasonably or very common, like real estate agent, absolutely. Buyer's agent, yeah, used to be, as you mentioned, like rich and famous and sort of only the privileged get to use a buyer's agent. Now it's really common nature for a lot of people just to include that in their team of people. But like property coach, property educator, what do you even call yourself, and what does that coaching involve? Like, where do you start and stop? You're not a mortgage broker, you're not a real estate agent, you're not a buyer's agent, you just teach people to go and do it themselves. Like, how do you even label that stuff? So yeah, you're right, it still has its I suppose question marks today as to what the role entails.
But I think it's a really important one, and it's a one that sort of sits in the middle of a lot of different things too that can be a solution. Like they are questions that mortgage brokers aren't licensed to answer. They're questions that financial planners, you know, property being a product that can't actually specifically advise on, that's a solution. But then people who want to be empowered to do it themselves, like it is this really niche middle ground that you've found that actually connects all the dots of every other service that I think will be more and more popular over time.
Yeah, look, who knows? I think it much easier if you're, and I'm actually coaching, training four guys at the moment to enter the industry, which I'm quite excited about and really enjoy. And one of those is in the education department at the moment and looking to transition out. Like, he's a perfect fit for being that property coach, if you want to call that, as opposed to the buyer's agent. So yeah, it's again coming back to where your passion lies.
Just on that note, because I'm sure there's people that tune in that are like property nerds, property fanatics that listen to every episode every Wednesday. I met some at the Melbourne show. They're like, we've bought our property, but we still listen every Wednesday morning when it comes out, which just warms my heart to know that people actually tune in on weekly and Absolutely. Pay attention to the notifications. So thank you to those people. But for those people who are thinking about, you know, we love what John's doing, we want to do something similar, what would you say are the top three attributes of someone who makes a good property coach outside of obviously liking property?
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good question to ask. I think you've got to be relatable. You've got to have the ability to leave your ego at the door and just understand and listen well to people. And I come back to the name of our business, Solvair, and I think, well, you've actually got to create solutions. So you've got to listen well enough to be able to look from the outside in without emotion, without ego, without any of that, and provide a solution that's taken into account everything that you've asked of that person. And I think to go a further step, it's asking really good questions of those people so you can get a better understanding. And I always remember the old accountant meeting. It's like I go in, I give them my paperwork, and all of a sudden I've got a tax return done, but I haven't learned anything. And my accountant's still that today. I'll only learn from my accountant the questions that I've asked for him to give me the answer. If I don't ask him any questions, I still don't learn a thing. So I think the knowledge is in the question asking.
Yeah, totally. And I think having the patience as well to, you know, put your opinion aside or your thoughts aside while someone is trying to communicate what they're after or what they need help with is also pretty handy in the process.
Yeah, totally. If you've got to absolutely do that. And I think, and I definitely don't know it all and never will, but being 20 years in the property space of buying and selling property myself personally for my own wealth, gives me the confidence to back myself in when I provide a solution for someone, and that I think is important. Like a lot of people say, "Oh, who's qualified? What qualifications have they done? Like in any industry, right? Are they fully qualified?" And obviously, you need to get your ticks and checks and make sure that you are the real deal. But nothing beats experience in a particular industry.
Yeah, agree. I've got two closing questions for you before we wrap up. The first one is, what is the best general piece of advice or maybe a particular motto that you live by that you've picked up along the way, whether it's business or personal related?
Oh, bits of advice. Don't have regrets, I think, is the big one that I run with. Like, what's the alternative? If we don't do this, and whatever this may be, if you don't do it, what are the ramifications of that? Are you going to be sitting back in 5 years' time saying, well, I'm still in no better position? So that sort of leads itself to don't die wondering. Like, you've just got to get out there and maximise your opportunities out there, and you can never then sit back and say, well, I didn't give it my best shot, and I think if it didn't work out, it wasn't through lack of trying. And for some unknown worldly reason, good things happen to people that do have a go and do stick their neck out and live their best life.
Take action. I think that's the biggest thing, isn't it? Don't just sit there. Yeah. Do something.
Do. Don't think, do.
Correct. And my final question for you is, what does John Pigeon's ultimate day look like?
Oh, wow. What does that look like? My family going to be listening to this, do you reckon?
I don't know. Do they tune in every Wednesday? Because mine certainly don't.
No, mine definitely don't. Look, I would definitely get up and exercise. That's a non-negotiable. Probably from anywhere from 4 till 7, depending on what it is.
Gosh, you're brave.
Best time of the day when you've got kids because they don't know that you've gone and come back, sort of thing. I would do probably 2 to 3, 4 hours of work, and then I'd probably have lunch with my wife, and then after that I'd tee off at 1 o'clock and finish at about 3:30 in a golf cart, that is, because I've done my exercise so I don't need to walk the course. And then I'd go to the 19th and have 3 or 4 beers with my good friends, and then I'd come home and spend some time with the kids.
Living your best life. Love it. Do you have a day that looks like that? Like, do you get a day every now and again that looks like that?
We've only just started. I said to the guys in the office, I said, we need to have Friday's work from home day, right? Yep. So just don't pressure yourself into coming into the office. And we're pretty flexible work hours here, to be honest. You get the work done, it doesn't matter. But, yeah, have some time to that. Does that happen? Probably not so much the golf bit, but, I've got a pretty good balance, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. And it's all about balance, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah, absolutely it is.
Well, thank you for sharing, John. I found it interesting to just hear a bit more about, I guess, you know, your opinions, your points of view and where you sort of come from as well. I think people who have listened for a long time, like we often talk about topics, we don't necessarily get to know you or I in the process. So hopefully that's given a bit of context about John as a person as well as a professional. And like I said in the middle of the episode, John also does help people buy property. So I think that's really important to know, particularly in the investment space, because we do have a lot of keen investors listening, whether it's a clarity call that's suitable for you or maybe it's a more in-depth service. Not that this is like a deliberate plug for John, but I just think it's important to know what he actually does because he provides a lot of value. There are links in the show notes to have a little bit of a look. Maybe you've clicked with something John has said today. Maybe you're keen to get into the industry and maybe in your next intake of looking at people that you might be training and coaching, there might be someone who's listening that's keen on that. So feel free to reach out to John in the capacity that suits you best, if at all. And I've really enjoyed today. It's been nice just to get to know you a bit more.
Thank you, Emily, and thank you for the great questions and the nice, kind words as well. Good to have a
not
good
too
yarn,
brutal of an interview.
No, it wasn't. not too hard hitting. We didn't have to say no comment.
No, because I know you're interviewing me next. So if I went too hard on you,
yes,
I would have gotten it back.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, until next week. If you aren't part of the Facebook group, My Millennial Money, definitely go and jump in there for any future questions that you might have for either of us or just more generally about property. But until next week, we will be in your ears soon.
All right. Thank you.
We acknowledge the Awabakal people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
Taking your property journey to the next level starts with education.
That's why we make this podcast, but we've also created online courses to equip you with the knowledge you need to take the next steps.
I've created the Solvair Online Academy, open to both first home buyers and seasoned investors, where I share my tips and experience from 20 years in the property space.
And if you're you're a first home buyer, I have the course just for you. Everything from pre-approval all the way through into your settlement and everything in between. How to place an offer, how to bid at auction, what to even look for at an open home, and what questions to ask the agents. It's all covered in my online course.
Follow the links in the show notes to sign up and get started today.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.